Notes from the Upper West Side, a novel by Dan Wrench.
Chapter 123, Brain Screams.
Aragorn,
Squire said,
I really love the smell back here.
To this day, I don't know much about Squire, but I definitely know this. Wherever a normal person would use a curse word, he uses a name from Lord of the Rings. On that first day I met him and started hearing all the Frodos and Gandalfs and Bilbos, it made me picture his upbringing like it was a little movie of his mom beating him with a hairbrush. And then later, after maybe he mowed the lawn, rewarding him with a sword and sorcerer thriller on DVD with popcorn.
Oh, I know,
Fonda said.
That smell is like, it is like one of the major perks of the job.
I was still trying to be cordial with Cammy, and Captain Think was ranging around for new ways to implement that cordiality. I had just complimented her hair a few seconds before, and she sort of blew that off. Okay, fuck the hair, I told myself. She also had this tattoo on her right forearm that I never noticed before. It was a big flower with the words, Eat Your Love on it, in flowy script with red tinges. It didn't look like it was completely filled in with colors yet, so I guessed it was pretty new. She must have gotten the outline etched on after our near fist fight at the Film Center Cafe. She's eating love now? Whose love is she eating? I demanded in my skull. Did she get that tattoo for Winthorpe? Is she blowing some other guy already? But I've been in therapy for decades just so I can have the ability to deal with these kinds of brain screams the second I hear them. So I settled down pretty fast and snarked to myself. Eat your love? What's that supposed to be, a folk song? I gig-cackled. But I still wanted her to get it that I was genial, affable, magnanimous even. So I thought I'd try a new variation on complimenting her hair. I like your hair up like that with the little rose holding it, I said. Is it a real rose? Nothing. Holding your hair? I heard her click her tongue.
Of course not,
she said.
It's part of the clip.
Okay, the whole cordial initiative? Dead. I looked at Eat Your Love on her forearm again. Another gig cackle.
Have you got any tobacco for me?
She asked. It was a little petulant. I didn't know what she was talking about for a sec then. Oh yeah, I'm supposed to be measuring one for the road into a fresh pack based on the order slip. Hold on. Okay. I had in my hand the last one Roz did, which I assumed was finished, and passed it to Cammy.
Here, I said. Daddy's got your smoke for you.
She gave me a look that said the sooner I found an attic to hang myself in, the better. When she took the baggie from my hand, I noticed she had this fixed grin on her face. A rictus grin. Like you see in horror movies when some hot chick gets her soul possessed by one of those demons that doesn't vomit a lot. An urbane demon who's just really, really happy to be here. At first I thought she shouldn't have such a horror face or I'd get the impression it was agony for her to talk to me. Then I thought, what if she really is in agony or something? What the fuck? And at the same time, my brain was screaming, where the fuck are Mallory and Cynthia?
I told you, Mallory and Cynthia are out until Saturday,
Bang said. And I thought, how the hell does Bang know what I'm thinking? And then I thought, Jesus, maybe everyone can tell. I looked around the room. Nope, no strange looks. I turned back to Cammy. I guessed she was blaming me for that day at the Film Center Cafe. That day when she admitted blowing Winthorpe and I exploded like Nagasaki. I decided to revive the cordiality initiative in spite of her maybe blaming me. We were colleagues, after all. Decorum required us to try and get along. I bent in closer to make the dialogue more private.
"Daddy's got your tobacco for you," I said all low.
When she rolled her eyes, I felt the urge to gig cackle. At first I repressed it, but when I saw her just sitting there waiting, it was too much like a full-body deadpan, so the gig cackle burst forth. Other people were talking. Nobody was paying attention to the simmering drama of some smarmy twat ignoring me while I tried to be collegial. I noticed I couldn't smell Cammy even when I moved in close. The place was just tobacco smell. Nothing could overcome it. And trying to smell her made me wonder if it was worth the effort. And wondering if it was worth the effort drove me back to considering whether I should treat her with decency or whether I should just ignore her. I tried to take my mind off this conundrum by figuring my way through the process Roz had described. There's the tag with amount ordered on it, 8 ounces. Here's the roll of fresh packs, and the scale was kind of smudged, but I could see the 8-ounce mark. Looked like a postage scale to me, you know? Like you can get for a few bucks in a stationery store with a dial in front and a flatbed on top to hold whatever it is you're trying to weigh. It looked, you know, cheap. Then I started thinking about how I was magnanimous to Cammy a second ago and about how she didn't even try to return the gesture. That really scraped my scales. But then I thought, I get it. She didn't hear me. I was trying to be low and private, but she was probably tuned into the other conversations going on in the room. She giggled. Yep, I thought. That's it. She's listening to one of Bang's stupid riffs. So I finished up the order with tobacco and flipped the baggie off the scale and sealed it at the little grooved lip and handed it to her. My hand was out and holding the baggie, but she didn't see it. I chuckled.
Oh, Cammy,
I said, kind of sing-songy. She turned around.
Daddy calling.
She looked at me for a sec with extra wide eyes. Then she snapped the baggie out of my hand and put it in a cardboard box. I gotta tell you, kids, I felt rebuked. I mean, why was I stuck here alone with this boy-blowing trollop in the first place? No Cynthia or Mallory till Saturday. I had a good mind to go to the gym and hunt Nipsey. Or cross the room and make a move on Fonda. But I kind of complicated the Fonda opportunity a week earlier when she made the face after I called Whispers Bobsta. And after the science aficionado faux pas. And Captain Think, who I'd given the assignment of coming up with a Fonda strategy, didn't even have a first draft yet. So I was stuck being friendly to Smarms, but obviously there was some reason she was offended by me. That really threw a lock on my Jones.
Notes from the Upper West Side is a work of fiction. The people depicted in this work do not exist.
Notes from the Upper West Side, copyright 2023 by Dan Wrench.